Is that true?
And if it is, what of it? Nikki said.
Riley looked at the big man, but he wasn't afraid of him.
Ask him what she is capable of, and tell him when he wakes for the night that she has grown worse.
She tortures those we love so she can feed on both their terror and ours for them. Those of us allowed to go out for work can never take all our families with us, so she has a hostage in case we try to leave her territory. We all know what will happen to those left behind if we try to escape, but many of us want to leave her.
I can talk to Jean-Claude, but I can't promise anything, I said. He started to take my hand, but Nikki got in the way, so Riley had to just drop his hands to his side and plead just with his eyes. They were good at being sad, those eyes.
Tell him we would do anything to be free of her.
Anything is a big offer, I said. Do you understand what it could mean?
I know that we will never be truly safe until she's dead. Truly dead.
I'm not an assassin, Mr. Riley.
I know you kill vampires in America.
When I have a legal order of execution on a vampire who's killed people, yes.
She's killed hundreds over the centuries.
I can't convict her for centuries-old crimes. No one can, I said.
She is hurting, torturing, maiming people here and now in this time.
If you can prove that, then the Irish police may be able to help you.
If she finds out that I spoke against her to you, she will kill me or have me killed. You'll never find the body either, for the sea does not give up its dead.
What do you want me to do for you, Mr. Riley? What can I do for you that's worth that risk?
There is a new vampire ruler for the first time in thousands of years. He seems to believe in equality for all preternatural beings. I ask, no, I beg, for his aid against the abusive monster that creates and feeds upon my people.
I'll talk to him, but the original deal with the European vampires was that Jean-Claude just rules America.
Maybe that's why she's gotten worse. She doesn't think anyone can touch her now.
He shuddered, huddling his coat a little tighter around himself. You could probably have gotten the same response in an email to him or Micah, I said. He looked at me then with sorrow in his face. It was the kind of look you see on the news when people stagger out of natural disasters or war zones.
Some things you can't put in an email, he said, and raised his shirt.
His stomach was covered in scars. I'd seen worse, but not many. Flannery made a sharp hiss between his teeth before he could stop himself. Edward showed nothing. Nikki was very still beside me. What did you say in face of torture like that?
She did this to me because I was too afraid of her to want to bed her. She started cutting me and told me if I didn't find my desire, that she'd cut lower and make certain I never desired anyone ever again. Somehow I found a way to do what she demanded.
He slid his shirt back in place, covering up the wounds.
Evil bitch, Nikki said, low and with feeling.
It had to hit some of the issues from his own abuse.
She is that, Riley said. Your proof, Riley, Flannery said. Come to the police station. I'll help you fill out a complaint. My mother and sister are still back there with the evil bitch. I can't go to the police unless I can free my family first.
We can't arrest her without a charge.
And you can't rescue my family before you arrest her, I know. Don't you think we've thought about going to the human police before?
If your family is being held against their will, then that's kidnapping or something, right? I asked.
Yes, Flannery said.
His whole attitude had changed once he saw the scars.
She is inside a fortress that has stood for centuries. You cannot rescue all her hostages before you enter her den, and she will kill them.
I'll find out what we can do, Flannery said.
No, you must give me your word of honor that you will not tell the other officers.
You've reported a crime to me, to all of us, and we all have badges.
I did not come to you as U.S. Marshals and Irish Garda. I came to you as a fairy doctor, a vampire queen, and death, because that is what the vampires call you, Marshal Forrester. If I wanted to sign the death warrant for my mother and sister, I would have walked into a Dublin police station years ago.
Riley finally got Flannery's word of honor that he wouldn't tell any other officers or Gerda, but only other Fae. If they could help the Rowan, then the Rowan would take the help.
I have been too long. I must go,
he said, and he left with our cell phone numbers memorized, but he wouldn't give us a number at which to contact him. He was too afraid that his phone could be taken, and my name would be found in the contacts list. The waitress shooed the men out, and finally me, and started mopping the floor because that was the story she'd told her boss. Someone had made such a mess she had to mop the floor. She didn't want to talk to us anymore, so we went back to the table. The food was waiting for us. The stew was amazing, served with dark, sweet bread. I had 3 glasses of water along with 2 Cokes, so I was hydrated and caffeinated. Life was good. Edward dropped us all at the hotel to meet up with the others because we all needed to catch a couple of hours while we could.
The local police have gotten cold feet about you again, Anita. They seem to think if they let you see all their evidence, you'll use it to go off and start killing vampires.
Why are they more afraid of my level of violence than yours? I asked.
You have a higher kill count.
I leaned in and whispered, only legal kills. He smiled and then chuckled. He'd always be ahead of me if we counted illegal kills, but that wasn't something to share with the Irish cops. Are you saying they may not let me help tonight?
Get some sleep, Anita.
Damn it. Ted,
by the time you've had a nap, your fiancé may be awake for a phone call.
Yeah, I'll be talking to Jean-Claude. He watched Nathaniel and Dev walk past with some of the luggage. The other guard who had checked us in had just dumped the luggage in one room to be sorted later.
And Anita, actually sleep.
I'm finally exhausted from the time change. Trust me, I'll sleep. Nikki went past with more luggage.
Dev is making noises about wanting to bunk with you and Nathaniel for today. I think you'll sleep better if I'm the one with you and Nathaniel. I'll agree with that, Edward said, smiling.
I frowned at both of them. I plan on sleeping, nothing else, for the next couple of hours.
Scout's honor?
Edward asked.
Yes!
Can you give the Scout's honor if you've never been a Boy Scout?
Nikki asked.
Enough! Let's go to bed and sleep!
In the end, it was Dev who bunked with us because Nathaniel voted that way. We really did sleep, but we put Nathaniel in the middle of Dev and me. That wouldn't have worked if it had been Nikki. We got Damien out of his bag, and he fell into our arms with the limp, heavy roll of a dead body. The new technology could say that vampires' brain activity didn't go down to true dead like that of a corpse, but when you were holding them in your arms, they felt dead. Maybe if I hadn't had a job where I saw so many people die, it wouldn't have haunted me so much when it was someone I cared for and it was only temporary for the day. We put Damien into the closet for extra sunlight safety. We had to balance him right and keep shoving in arms and legs to keep him from getting caught in the door. It didn't feel like we were tucking our lover in for the night or the day. It felt like we were hiding a body that we didn't want the maid to find. I cuddled down on the far side of the bed with Nathaniel tucked in at my back, one arm holding me tight to the front of his body like I was his favorite comfort object. His naked body touched as much of mine as possible, like we always slept when we were next to each other. Dev's arm came across Nathaniel so that he cupped his bigger hand around my body, tracing Nathaniel's arm so that they both held me as we began to drift off to sleep. I dreamed about Riley the Rowan, though I kept calling him a Selkie in the dream. It was the word I was more familiar with, but he kept correcting me as we walked down one of the streets of Dublin with the tight, neat brick sidewalks and the rougher stones of the road itself. We were walking in the middle of the road at one point. Cars had to stop so they wouldn't hit us. I kept saying, we need to get out of the street or we'll get hit.
It doesn't matter, he said and held out his hand to me.
I took his hand and the dream changed. We were someplace dark and he was chained with manacles at his wrists. Even in the dream, I realized they were manacles, not cuffs, because there was no lock, just that metal piece that slipped in and twisted to the side. If you could reach it, you could free yourself, but Riley couldn't. There was a beam of sunlight coming from somewhere above us like a natural spotlight that showed his face and upper body. The light was bright enough that I could finally see a clear line between his pupils and the black irises of his eyes. He blinked those large, beautiful, and strangely inhuman eyes at me. They were human eyes, but the color echoed his seal, and the dream changed again. I was standing beside the Irish Sea at the crime scene, except I had walked down between the narrow houses and was on the rocky shore. The sea was gray and white-capped, the air cold and smelling of rain and storm. There were seals in the water, riding like surfers waiting for that perfect wave. They looked at me with huge black eyes. I'd always thought that seals were cute, but when one of them looked up at me through the water, it looked like a drowning victim, dead in the water but moving, still looking at me with huge dead eyes. I stared through the cold water into those dead eyes with the wind whipping my hair across my face as the rain started to fall in cold, wet drops. The wind picked up the water, and suddenly I couldn't tell if it was rain or seawater that was drenching me. The sea was empty except for the storm. Where had the seals gone? And I was back, looking down at Riley, chained to the floor of that cave with its beam of sunlight that should have been cheerful but wasn't. There was a hand with a long, thin, slightly curved blade cutting through his clothes and baring the pale skin of his untouched stomach. I thought, that's not right. Where are the scars? Then it was like a video that kept jumping from one scene to another. Scars, untouched skin, scars, untouched skin. The blade sliced that flawless skin, bright red blood following the line of the blade like a red ink pen drawing lines across his skin. Except it was the paper that held the ink, not the pen. The crimson ink began to spill out of the lines that she carved in his skin, trickling and chasing down his skin while he told her that she was beautiful, that he wanted her so much. She cut his clothes off him until his body lay pale and strangely beautiful against the dark rock with that splash of sunlight. The cuts on his stomach looked like lines leaking bright red ink to spill down the sides of his body and onto the floor. She caressed his body where he lay limp and small, too afraid and in too much pain to hide that he didn't want her, that he didn't want anyone like this. The video jumped again. His body was covered in old scars, but this time the knife moved down lower. This time, she would not stop. I tried to scream, "No, don't!" But it was my hand holding the knife covered in his blood. Nathaniel's screams woke me.
Chapter 52. I wasn't the only one who had heard Nathaniel's screams, because Nikki damn near took the door off before Dev could open it. All the guards tried to be in the room at the same time, but it wasn't big enough. We finally had to decide who to kick out and who to keep. Nathaniel and I had had a version of the same dream, except that where my dream had switched between Riley scarred and Riley getting the wounds the first time, Nathaniel had switched between Riley getting cut up and Nathaniel being the one chained and tortured. There was another knock, and it took us a second to realize the knock came from the closet door. Dev opened the closet door, and Damien half fell out into his arms. I thought at first that Damien had shared our nightmare, but he hadn't dreamed anything. He'd been dead to the world until something about Nathaniel and me freaking out had woken him early.
I woke in the dark, and I didn't know where I was, but I could feel Nathaniel's fear, and yours, and...
He reached out to us through the crowd of too many bodies in too small a space. Nathaniel went to that outstretched hand, and the moment they touched, I couldn't taste my pulse on my tongue anymore. Even letting Nikki hold me with all that strength hadn't calmed me this much, so I pushed away from him and went for them. I took Damien's other hand and was calmer yet, but when Nathaniel's other hand was in mine, so I was touching both of them at the same time, I was almost eerily calm. It was like on the plane flying to Ireland. Calm beyond all reason.
How do they do that for you? Dev asked.
Nathaniel turned to him.
I can help Damien do this, but I couldn't help us with Flannery's aunt and her mind games.
We all have our talents, I said, my voice calm because with the two men holding me, I was about as calm as I got outside of special circumstances.
But mine never seemed to be exactly what you need, Dev said.
Your talents were exactly what I needed in the first pub with the Fae. He smiled for me, but not like he believed it. Normally, I'd have tried to figure out how to make him feel better, but confusing relationship issues would have to wait. Riley said that she would kill his sister and mother if she found out what he'd done. Nathaniel shook his head.
No, she's going to cut him again, and this time she won't stop.
Even with the three of us held in that unnatural calm, the fear of that shared nightmare thrilled through us and into Damien. He'd been dead to the world while we dreamed, but now he saw what we'd seen and felt, and it was pretty awful, even secondhand.
She'd never touched Riley when I left, but it's been 5 years. I guess he's old enough for her now, Damien said, his hands clutching ours so tight it almost hurt.
Do you know him personally? I asked.
I know most of the Rowan around her, at least by sight.
Do you have a phone number for Riley? We need to warn him.
It was just a nightmare, Dev said.
No, Damien said. I never had a number for him. He was a teenager.
18 or 19 at most. His mother helps take care of the fortress, so Riley was just Isabel's son.
Neither of you does dream magic, Kazim said. Could you both be panicking over a shared nightmare?
We both shook our heads. I wish, but no. Somehow she was in our dreams, or we were in hers, I said. Nathaniel looked at me, his eyes as pale as I'd ever seen them, lavender gray.
She knows that we saw his scars, Anita.
Yeah, because when she showed us the nightmare, I wondered where his scars were.
I wondered the same thing, Anita. It was like we were remembering him from today, but it was mixed up with her memory of hurting him.
I nodded. Yes.
We have to warn him,
Nathaniel said. How? He has our phone numbers, but we don't have his.
Flannery's aunt might know how to contact him, Dev said.
Do you have a number for his mother? I asked Damien.
No, there's no phone at the castle, and she who made me doesn't like cell phones. She doesn't like most of the new technology.
I realized that I was still nude, so were Nathaniel and Dev, but their nudity didn't bother me. I squeezed Damien's and Nathaniel's hands once more for luck and let go so I could start getting dressed. The calmness that had been keeping my emotions in check faded when I stopped touching them. I'd known it would, but it was still a shock to taste my pulse in my throat again. It was as if the calmness had stopped the panic but not helped me process it. Just 1 minute calm, and the next, back I was, back to having woken from a gruesome nightmare. The calm that the three of us shared didn't allow us to skip the bad stuff. It merely delayed us having to deal with it. Nathaniel clutched at Damien and reached for me again.
I love you, but we have to get dressed and find him before she does.
Riley said that he was in Dublin for work, but that the wicked bitch isn't here. We'll find him,
Nikki said. If she sends one of the other Rowan into the town to call Riley home, he will have to go to her, Damien said.
Why does he have to go?
Dev asked.
Because his mother and his sister are both still at the castle with She Who Made Me.
She uses family members as hostages to make sure the Selkie who travel outside for work obey her, I said.
Riley's sister can't be more than 16 now. She was just a little girl when I left.
This is not your fault, Damien, I said. I had underwear and a bra on, but I was struggling with the jeans. I'd picked out a pair of date jeans, not work jeans. Skinny date jeans weren't good for wearing weapons. I stripped the jeans off and started pulling clothes out of my open suitcase.
Anita, let me help,
Nathaniel said, and knelt beside me to reach into the part that was still packed and magically got out a pair of black tactical pants and a fresh t-shirt. He'd packed the suitcase so he knew where everything was. Even if I had packed it, I still wouldn't have remembered it all. He got his own clothes out before he stood back up. I had the pants on by the time he'd chosen his outfit. Nikki turned to Dev.
If you're coming with us, get dressed fast.
Do I have time to just change into fresh clothes? Damien asked.
I don't know. Do you?
Nikki asked. Damien stripped off his shirt in one smooth motion and went for his own suitcase.
Why doesn't someone call Flannery and ask if his Aunt Nim knows how to contact Riley?
Dev asked. I stopped in my frantic scramble for clothes. That was smart, but I don't have a number for him either.
I'll call Edward,
Nikki said.
Since when do you have his cell phone?
I asked. Nikki just smiled at me and started to punch in buttons on his phone. Dev started getting dressed. I had everything on but my boots and weapons. He'd never be dressed in time to go with us. Dev's voice was muffled as he pulled his shirt on over his head and asked,
Where are we going if we don't know where Riley is now?
Girlfriend's work, I said as I got my first gun settled on my belt. Nikki got off the phone.
Edward is calling Nolan to contact Flannery.
Great, I said. Damien was dressed in fresh clothes, including a coat that I'd never seen before and a pair of nice but utilitarian-looking boots. His jeans were tucked into the boots. His crimson hair fell loose around the shoulders of the warm, weather-resistant coat so that he looked like a male model in an outdoorsy clothes commercial. The clothes were right, but he was too pretty to actually hike in them. Nikki waved his hand in front of my face. It startled me.
Do you have all the weapons you need?
Sorry, it's not like me to get that distracted in an emergency. I checked the two wrist-sheath knives with their high silver content and the big blade down my spine in its custom-made holster, which attached to the shoulder rig. It held mostly extra ammo now, and it attached to the gun belt where my main handgun sat in an inner pants holster. If I could have figured out a different way to carry the big knife, I'd have gotten rid of the custom-made shoulder holster, but it was great for extra ammo and a smaller backup gun. I put the AR-15 on its tactical sling across my body over the t-shirt and sweatshirt I was going to wear under my coat. I'd have to leave the coat unfastened to be able to get to the AR, but I couldn't open carry, not in Ireland. Hell, back home in the States it would have freaked people out, even with the words U.S. Marshal emblazoned on the back of my windbreaker. I was already missing my Bantam shotgun, which was back in the armory at Nolan's compound along with a few other things, but there was just no way to keep all our dangerous stuff at the hotel. They'd offer you a safe if you had expensive jewelry, but I'd never seen a hotel, no matter how nice, that offered you a secure weapon locker. It was always a problem when traveling for business. My phone rang, and it was Edward's ringtone, so I picked up.
Wait for Nolan's people to get there before you go out, Anita.
We're big boys and girls. I don't think we need to wait for a babysitter.
You don't have Irish credentials, and neither do I. We need someone with us who has credentials. That's part of the deal I made for all of you when you came into the country, remember?
I remember something vague about Nolan's people being with us when we were out in the city.
I won't make you wait for me, but don't leave the hotel without at least one of Nolan's people with you. Promise me, Anita.
Damn it, Edward, did Flannery have a way of contacting Riley?
Flannery is trying to get hold of his aunt now.
Then we need to get to the restaurant before his girlfriend is off shift for the day.
I know that, Anita.
What's the worst that could happen if we get caught in Dublin without proper ID? I asked.
You could be deported or even jailed if you get the wrong Gerda and the wrong judge.
Oh. Okay, good point. How long until Nolan's people arrive, and where the hell are you that someone else will get to the hotel first?
I'm trying to convince the police that you won't start slaughtering people in the streets, and you really will be useful to the investigation.
I thought we'd settled all that before I got on the plane.
So did I, he said,
and he sounded tired and frustrated, and underneath that was anger. Eventually, if they kept pushing him, they'd get to his anger and stay there. Nicky's phone rang. He listened and then hung up.
Donahue and Brennan are downstairs to escort us where we need to go.
How did they get your number?
I told Edward to give it to whoever needed it.
Good thinking. I looked around the room. Everyone looked dressed and ready to go. Jake, Kazim, Ethan, and Domino were waiting out in the hallway for us. Fortune stuck her head out of her room long enough to kiss Nathaniel and me goodbye, and then she went back to sleep. She had Echo in her room, still waiting for nightfall. She couldn't leave Echo unprotected, and we didn't need the whole crew for this. Magda and Socrates were still at Nolan's compound, trying to make friends with the rest of his people. After what she'd done to one of their new super-strong cells, I really hoped Nolan had a plan B. Donnie met us in the lobby, smiling. Brennan, a lot less happy, was behind her. Honestly, I was surprised to see him, but I did my best to just take it in stride. Apparently medical had cleared him, and Nolan thought he could handle the assignment.
Forrester says you need an escort, he said.
Actually, he said babysitter, Donnie said, grinning.
I appreciate you keeping us legal, I said, and kept walking toward the door. They fell in behind and to the side of me.
What's the emergency? She asked.
We may have inadvertently let the bad guy know we were contacted by a local today. Jake and Kazim did the bodyguard thing at the door, checking for safety and holding the door for me.
Unless you know something we don't know who the villain of the piece is yet, Brennan said.
Let me rephrase then, the suspected bad guy.
Who do you suspect? He asked.
Where are you parked and will it hold all of us? I asked.
Not far, and yes, Donnie said.
Lead us to the car.
You do know that you don't outrank us, right?
Brennan said. Donnie went to the left and kept walking. We followed her with Brennan keeping up, but not happy about it.
Are you deliberately ignoring my questions? He asked.
I'll answer them in the car on the way, Brennan, but I'd really like to find our local informant before he ends up tortured and killed.
Tortured and killed? What are you talking about, Blake? You're here to help us with our vampire problem, not to get involved in another crime.
I'm hoping to stop another crime from happening, if that's okay with you. I walked past him with Nicky at my back. Brennan stopped asking questions and just caught up with Donnie. I fought the urge to start jogging down the sidewalk. We didn't need to attract that much attention yet. It was still daylight. Riley would probably be safe until nightfall. Of course, Damien was awake already, and about the time I had decided to jog, Donnie had stopped at a van. I could save the running for later. Chapter 53. We couldn't find Riley. We couldn't find his girlfriend. It was like the harder we tried to locate them, the more lost they became. Our last hope was that Flannery's aunt would come through, but the last info from him was that Auntie Nim didn't have much to do with the Rowans because they weren't her creatures. It was as if people refused to do business with the werewolves in St. Louis because Wolf was Jean-Claude's animal to call, and their Ulfric was his moiety bet. I still thought it was interesting that Flannery's fey relatives had known about the vampires in Ireland all this time, but they hadn't shared the news with him, not even after vampires had started showing up in Dublin. I actually asked him why they didn't tell him sooner. His answer? I asked them if they knew anything about the new vampires in Dublin. I didn't ask them if there were other vampires in Ireland outside the city. Apparently the Irish fey answered direct questions, but what you didn't ask, they didn't answer, even if logically it was connected. An important safety tip to remember if I had to question any of them on this trip. I'd set my phone alarm to the time when Jean-Claude typically woke for the day in St. Louis, but I didn't need an alarm. I felt him wake for the day, thousands of miles away. I knew when his eyes opened for the first time to stare at the ceiling, felt the warmth of the body curled beside him, one arm flung across his stomach. I knew by the size and weight of the arm that it was Richard, because I had the only other man in his life who had that kind of size and muscle. He knew I was sitting in the back of the van with Nathaniel beside me. I saw, felt, smelled the warm darkness of his bed and Richard's body fever-warm beside him, his shoulder-length hair in a wild tangle hiding the handsome face. I couldn't remember the last time Richard had slept over with any of us. Jean-Claude's voice whispered through my head,
"Ma petite, what have you been doing while I slept?"
Just hearing him, feeling him inside me like that, felt as if I could finally take a deep breath and let go of some tension that I hadn't known I was holding. Nathaniel gripped my hand tighter. I knew he felt it too, because we were touching when it happened. Damien reached from the seat behind me where he'd been out of direct sunlight in the more enclosed depths of the van, but now he reached into the sunlight from the windows so he could touch my shoulder, and there was that jump of connection from him to me to Nathaniel and to Jean-Claude, and then Richard stirred in the bed. I knew he was awake, had a moment of seeing the darkened room through his eyes and Jean-Claude's, so that it was almost dizzying. I was glad I wasn't driving when it happened. Damien squeezed my shoulder as his other hand found Nathaniel's arm and the world steadied again. I could still see the ceiling above the temporary bed and missed the old canopy. Could feel my head resting on Jean-Claude's shoulder and arm while my other arm was across his body, and my only view was silk sheets and the white gleam of the vampire's body. I knew they were both nude, and the moment I thought it, I realized that I had thought it too loudly and that they'd both heard me. And suddenly there was awkwardness in the nudity that hadn't been there before. Why? Because I hadn't just thought nude. I'd thought about the possibilities of them in the bed, wrapped in silk, naked. That was all me, and I tried to make that thought loud, too. Richard started to get up, spilling the sheets down his chest, baring his upper body, opening up the cocoon of warmth his body had made beside Jean-Claude. Then a sense of calm washed over all of us, as in all five of us. The beginnings of unease in Richard quieted. He lay back down in the sheets, finding the warmth his body had made for him overnight. It put him back beside Jean-Claude, who lay very still, waiting for the other man to decide what he was doing. I could feel everyone more clearly in my head in that moment than Jean-Claude. He was very carefully neutral, though I could feel the tension in his body through the connection to Richard. Nathaniel leaned back toward Damien, who leaned forward, his long hair sliding forward like a veil to cover the sides of his face from the sunlight. His hair wasn't much of a barrier, but it was better than bare skin and bare light. He'd kept the sunglasses on. They wouldn't come off until we were in a dark room or night fell. Nathaniel stroked that red hair and then rubbed his cheek along Damien's face like a cat scent marking. Damien laughed and leaned his face against the other man's so that Nathaniel could hold him as much as the seatbelts would allow. I felt Richard's surprise at the interaction. It was a big change in Damien's comfort level about touching other men. Richard moved up higher on the pillows so that he was taller than Jean-Claude, but he didn't move away from him, just moved his arm so that it lay across his chest and not his stomach. It left Jean-Claude's arm around Richard so that they held each other, though I knew that if Jean-Claude were more certain of his welcome, he'd have held him differently. Richard said out loud,
Relax, Jean-Claude. Just relax. Cuddle if you want to cuddle, but don't lie here feeling this tense. It's not a trap, I promise.
Because we'd all heard Jean-Claude's thought, because it was too loud to hide.
It's a trap. A girl trap.
Girl traps aren't about genitalia. They're about that more feminine habit of saying, do this or don't do that, and punishing the masculine half of the couple for doing what the feminine half asked slash told them to do in the first place. There are girl traps and boys stupid, but it's not always women who set the traps, and it's not always men who are stupid. We all take turns. Jean-Claude relaxed slowly, inch by cautious inch. The way that Richard was lying across his arm, it was more comfortable and natural for him to curl his arm around the other man's back and turn a little into Richard. They were only an inch apart in height, but the way Richard had fixed himself on the bed, it made him seem much taller, except that I could feel where everyone's legs were, and it was an illusion. An illusion of dominance, and I had a moment to hear, feel, realize that part of the two men's problem with each other was that they were both dominant. I don't mean in a bondage and submission way, but just big, athletic, dominant men who were both used to winning. Jean-Claude had spent too many centuries at the mercy of other masters to be as obvious about it as Richard could be, but it was there as they lay as entwined as I'd seen them in a very long time. Who would submit? Who would bend first? Without me there to help them bridge that decision, they were stalemated. Asher helped them too sometimes, but if he hadn't been in the doghouse, Richard wouldn't have been there at all. The sorrow among us all, the almost possibilities stretched among us like a light going out. Nathaniel said, "No, not this time." He kissed me, and with Jean-Claude and Richard so deep in my head and heart it startled me, as if the bedroom in St. Louis was more real than the van and the men touching me here. It was what the three of us could have been and never were. I let myself fall into Nathaniel's kiss, fall into the total abandon of his love, his desire. He had no stop, held nothing back. It had scared the hell out of me at first, but now I realized that was why he was in my life, why he was my leopard to call, why we wore each other's rings. The sorrow from Richard was drowning deep, like the ocean had suddenly poured over us to dampen our spirits and drown us in what might have been's. Damien's own sorrow spilled like blood into the ocean of Richard's regrets. Nathaniel drew back from our kiss, and his eyes were solid, glowing lavender, like flower petals with the summer sun behind them. I whispered, "No."
"Yes," he said. "Say yes."
"To what?" Richard asked all the way from St. Louis.
"Happiness. Just be happy,"
Nathaniel said, and he turned those glowing eyes to Damien. The vampire looked at him for a long moment, and then he leaned into Nathaniel's knee and they kissed. It was gentle, almost chaste, but watching them kiss from inches away thrilled through me like it always did. Two men, both my lovers, kissing right there in front of me? What was not to love? Richard felt my body react to that kiss, and his regret swept up and over the excitement in my body and the lightness in my heart and drowned them both.
"What the hell are you doing back there?"
Brennan said from the front seat beside Donnie. Kazim said,
"We need to park and give them some privacy, or at least distance from this level of metaphysics."
"What?"
Brennan asked.
"They're doing magic," Dev said. "In the van?"
Donnie asked.
"Yes,"
Kazim said.
"God, Richard, just enjoy being in the moment," I said.
"You're not in the moment,"
he said to the air, as if I was in the room. I would never have said so out loud, but we were too far into one another's heads, so the thought came crystal clear. "And whose fault is that?"
"Mine,"
he said.
"Yours. His."
He kissed Jean-Claude on the head the way you'd kiss a child. Affectionate, but it meant nothing. I didn't understand how it could mean nothing when he was naked in bed with Jean-Claude. The possibilities for me were almost endless.
"Who's Richard?" Brennan asked.
"Park,"
Nikki said. When Damien and Nathaniel pulled back from the kiss, Damien slid his sunglasses off and the vampire's eyes were shining green fire. Green and lavender eyes turned to me aglow with power and peaceful happiness. Even here in the country where Damien had known so much pain, and after the nightmare Nathaniel and I had just shared, we were still happier than Richard. We were scrambling to find someone to keep them from being victims again, and I couldn't stop the memory of Riley's scars from crossing my mind to theirs. Once that memory crossed, everything followed in seconds. Minutes later, they both knew why we were searching for him. The nightmare that was half memory. Just not our memory.
Park soon, Nikki said.
Richard held Jean-Claude closer, but again it was for comfort and not for romance.
Well, that's awful, Richard said.
Ma petite, if we interfere to save the Selkie and his people, it will be war between us and Ireland, for she is master of that country. She is the vampire queen of Ireland.
She's lost control, Jean-Claude.
And some new vampire has smelled the weakness, Richard said.
Yes.
Damien leaned closer to my face, until the green of his eyes seemed to fill my vision. He thought about memories of her torturing the Selkie like the Cliff's Notes version of horrors. Richard pushed us away from him, but he could only push so far, because he wasn't comfortable enough with himself to have all the power at his command.
I don't want that in my head, he said out loud.
I left them behind, Richard, Damien said out loud in the van.
I thought I was helpless to save anyone but myself, but now I know differently. I know I am not powerless or weak. I have returned with a queen and her princes at my side.
You speak of war, Jean-Claude said.
How can you show us all those terrible things, and then expect us to agree to you risking Anita falling into her hands? Richard asked.
I'm not a victim, Richard, no matter what happens. That doesn't change, I said. Donnie found a parking spot. She turned the engine off, and we were suddenly sitting in silence that was too thick, like the way the air gets heavy before a storm. Damien leaned in even closer so that all I could see was green and whispered,
I haven't fed yet today.
My stomach was suddenly cramping with hunger. Nathaniel grabbed my arm in the back of a chair. We were suddenly starving. I saw Jean-Claude's eyes spring to life in the nearly dark bedroom, blue as if the midnight sky had caught fire. Richard's hands convulsed as he hugged the vampire to him.
Ma petite, tell me you've fed the ardieu since arriving in Ireland.
We took a nap for the jet lag, I said.
We haven't fed the ardieu today, Nathaniel said.
And everybody out, Domino said, opening the door.
All our people got out without any other prompting. They knew the drill. If you didn't donate blood and there was a hungry vampire in a van, you got out. If you weren't into group sex in a van on the streets of a foreign city and the ardieu might rise, you got out. Brennan couldn't get out fast enough, but Donnie wanted to know what was happening. Kazim got her out of the van and called to Jake. They were like most of the Harlequin. They only donated blood to their masters, but Jake turned to us.
Tell Jean-Claude that there is a reason that vampires treat their moiety bets as lesser, because in the end, there can only be one.
One what? I asked.
King, Jake said, and closed the door to the van behind him.
Chapter 54. Nikki stayed because he wouldn't leave me, even if that meant he had to open a vein for a new vampire. Dev stayed because he didn't have a problem with donating blood to the right vampire. I hadn't known that Damien qualified as the right vamp for him, especially with the ardieu as a possibility. But stranger things had already happened in the last few days, so what was one more?
I must close the ties between us more than this, ma petite, or one hunger could feed into another.
Understood, I said. Why is the hunger so much worse? Richard asked.
Jet lag can make such things worse, Jean-Claude said.
Now you tell me, I said.
I did not dream you would leave your hotel room without feeding Damien.
I couldn't argue that. It had been careless, even stupid.
I will think upon what you have shown me, ma petite. I will talk to Pierrette and Pierrot, since they traveled to the Emerald Isle more than any of the other Harlequin. Perhaps they will have more insight to share.
Have Sin help you. Pierrette talked to him a lot easier than I thought she would talk to anyone.
I will include our young prince.
Damien pulled me out of my seat and drew me back into the dimness of the rear of the van. His eyes glowed brighter without the sunlight to compete with them. Nathaniel came with us. After pushing Richard back onto the bed, Jean-Claude stroked the thickness of his hair to one side so he could see the strong, clean line of his neck. In the van, we didn't have enough room for even two of us to kneel comfortably. Nikki helped us fold up some of the seats, as if we were making room for getting a delivery. I, We felt Jean-Claude's bloodlust, and underneath that, or entwined with it, was another kind of lust. It was as if something about my triumvirate powering up was affecting how much feedback we got between both groups. Richard rose and glared at the other man.
No, he said,
as if we couldn't all feel exactly how negative his reaction was to Jean-Claude seeing him as a lust object. Dev touched my arm, which made me look at him.
I need to know if it's as bad as the glimpses I'm feeling, he said, as if that explained anything.
If what is that bad? I asked.
Richard and Jean-Claude.
He held onto my arm, and I could suddenly feel his energy like warm sunlight. It seemed to chase away the anxiety that had automatically attached to Richard's attitude. I realized it was just that, automatic. He behaved a certain way, and I felt a certain way. Jean-Claude had similar problems with him. It was as if he'd conditioned all three of us, himself included, to function badly together. I'd always assumed that Dev being so easy to deal with meant he wasn't a deep thinker or a deep feeler, or somehow by being easy and fun, he was less. In that moment of warm clarity, I realized that Dev was easier because he simply had fewer hang-ups than the rest of us. Richard snarled,
"Get out of our heads, Devereaux."
The moment he used the last name, I realized that bit of knowledge had to have come from my memories in Ireland. I hadn't shared that specifically with Richard, which raised the question of how much had just quietly been transferred between us all without anyone knowing.
"No," Dev said, "don't you go all serious too."
"The serious tones down the ardeur," I said.
"But it will need to be fed today," Nikki said, "and you need to pick the time, not get surprised by it in the middle of a police investigation."
He had a point.
"Everyone has a point but me," Richard said,
and just like that, he wasn't pretty enough to overcome his deficits. I wasn't perfect, God knew, but I tried harder than this. That thought went through everyone's head, which didn't help anything. Dev stopped touching me and things were a little less bright. It felt depressing, like Jean-Claude, Richard, and I were just trapped on the hamster wheel of the same damn issues we'd been working on forever. I did my best to think how much I appreciated Richard working his issues in therapy, but underlying all of it was the pattern the three of us had set up, a pattern that didn't work. Dev was texting someone on his phone, which made me want to grab his phone and throw it. This was not the time or place, damn it, we were having a crisis!
Ma petite, you must find a way to be less loud in our heads.
I'm sorry, I don't mean—
It's the truth, Jean-Claude. It's just the truth. No amount of therapy is going to fix the three of us,
Richard said. He was sitting up in bed now with the sheet tucked around his waist, and all that muscled beauty as useless to Jean-Claude as it was to me, even though one of us was sitting right next to him and the other was half a world away. Tired of waiting for our impromptu therapy moment, Damien had pulled Nathaniel to him. They kissed, but Nathaniel turned his face to the side and offered his neck. The fang marks on it from yesterday showed against his skin. Nathaniel can't donate blood today after all you took yesterday, I said. Nathaniel's eyes sprang back to life like a lilac spark. I felt a spurt of anger from him. It reminded me of the anger he'd shown to Bobby Lee back in St. Louis. I did not want a repeat of that. Damien kissed the side of his neck just over the unhealed bite mark and then raised his head to say,
She's right, Nathaniel. I took blood from you 4 times yesterday. You must rest.
4 times?
Nikki said.
He needs red meat and lots of it.
They both do, Damien said. Nikki looked at him and quirked an eyebrow.
How many times?
Anita has 2 bites.
6 times? Impressive.
It's all about blood pressure, I said. More blood, more pressure.
No, Nikki said. 6 times is impressive for any man, dead or alive, Anita.
Dev joined in with,
You get rubby spots after a while, if nothing else. If Anita and I can't donate, then who can? Nathaniel asked.
Jean-Claude, in my, our, head, said,
Damien and I need to feed whomever that may be with.
Richard turned and glared at him.
I am going to donate blood to you this morning.
Jean-Claude was finally angry.
I do not go where I am not wanted, and I do not beg for blood or sex.
Richard's anger flared to answer, but there was a knock on their door.
Who is it?
Jean-Claude snapped, his voice hot with anger.
It's Angel, Jean-Claude. I was told you might need me.
The two men on the bed exchanged a look, and then Jean-Claude said,
Who told you that?
My brother.
Mephistopheles?
Jean-Claude made a question of the name.
He's the only brother I have, she said through the door.
All of us in the van were looking at Dev.
They need someone to help them bridge their issues, and everyone else who could help is here in Ireland.
He said it as if it were the most natural thing in the world, to have texted his twin sister to get out of bed and show up at the door of two men she'd never slept with for morning sex and blood donation. Jean-Claude said,
Mephistopheles, what have you done?
I told Anita that all the gold tigers were raised to meet the needs of the new father of tigers, whatever those needs might be.
From the door, Angel said,
May I come in?
She's your sister,
Richard said, and since he had one of his own, the comment held the confusion and creep factor of it.
Enter,
Jean-Claude said. The door to the room opened, and Angel walked in barefoot, a short black robe showing off miles of long, bare legs. She was only 4 inches shorter than her brother, and 5'11" was plenty tall enough to give you legs. I'd forgotten that she cut her hair so short. It was almost shaved on the sides where it still showed the black dye, but the roots growing in at the top of her hair were yellow blonde. It would take months for her natural color to grow back out. The shorter hair made her face look more square, more like Dev's face. Until she'd cut her hair, I hadn't thought they looked that much alike, but nothing made her any less feminine. She'd been the goth girl for years, thus the hair, but the mix of hair color seemed to play to the fact that her eyes were a mix of blue and brown, just like Dev's, except his was a pale blue with a line of pale tan slash gold, and Angel's eyes were a brighter blue with a brown that looked black from where the men watched her from the bed. The black hair helped the illusion of the eyes, which was probably one of the reasons she'd done it. The robe was open just enough to show a glimpse of breasts that moved under the silk of her robe as she strode toward the bed. I felt Richard's reaction to her, so tight and hard that it made me gasp. It fed into Damien's blood hunger and hit the ardure like an appetizer before the meal. Shit, I said out loud.
Lovely as always, Angel, but why are you here?
Jean-Claude asked.
I heard that you were one girl short this morning.
If Devereux can't hear me, Anita, tell him that brothers don't send their sisters to other men for fucking,
Richard said, and he meant it, even with his body telling all of us just how much he enjoyed seeing her. Richard would stand on his principles over his desires almost every time, which was admirable, but not helpful. Angel and Dev started talking at the same time, and they were almost word for word, one in the bedroom in St. Louis and the other in the van in Dublin.
We used to go out clubbing together in our teens. We're both tall, and that makes people think you're older. We would pick out couples to see if we could seduce both of them or take turns picking out a woman or a man to take home, or at least to a motel. We got so many people to do their first girl-on-girl, or boy-on-boy, or threesome.
He's your brother,
Richard said.
How could you have sex in the same room with him?
We were the only two bisexual people we knew,
Angel said.
It was just sort of part of who we were as twins.
Richard was shaking his head.
Until Angel decided she didn't want to be part of the grand plan to be the perfect golden tiger for the next father of tigers, she was my best friend. We did almost everything together. I went shopping with her so much that some of her friends thought I was gay until they found out I wasn't.
Dev grinned as he said the last. Words like incorrigible came to mind. Angel went to Jean-Claude, untying her robe so that it hung open as she came to the edge of the bed.
When they first demanded I give up my life and come serve you, I was so angry. And I still resent that. But I've watched you, both of you, and I'm intrigued. I'd like a chance to find out if you're as good as you look.
Jean-Claude smiled.
A charming offer.
He held his reaction in utter control, as if afraid to react even in the depths of his head because I was there listening. I decided to help by letting him know that I wasn't bothered by it.
Let her be the bridge you and Richard need.
How can you be okay with this, Anita?
Richard asked.
I'm out of country with half a dozen lovers of my own. It would be ridiculous of me to get pissed because you have a chance to sleep with Angel.
I couldn't quite hide the next thought, or maybe reaction, of my own. I was intrigued by her, too. There was that little spark of interest in her that still surprised me when it was about another woman. Richard said,
I'm still not used to you liking women.
Me either,
I said. Angel smiled and said,
Let's see how this goes. Maybe we can all play together when Anita gets home.
And that was enough to tip the balance for Richard. I think Jean-Claude was just trying to stay out of the pitfalls of the situation until Richard and I decided it for us all.
Angel then said, Dev asked if it would be possible for you to feed some of Anita's Ardeer needs because they're trying to find a missing person before he gets hurt.
Are you offering to feed the Ardeer for me? Jean-Claude said.
I'd like to know for myself if it's as amazing a fuck as the stories claim, she said.
He laughed, an abrupt, pleased sound. She'd do fine. She looked past Jean-Claude to Richard and said,
You are both very different people. If we were one-on-one, I'd approach you both very differently, so I will want a little guidance as to how to be with you both.
He looked at her for a long, serious moment, and then said,
We can do that.
Ma petite, I will close the links down low between us, if you will do the same on your end,
Jean-Claude asked.
We will.
And we did. I left them to their blood and sex, and they left us to ours. Chapter 55. There was a knock on the van door. I called, Who is it?
It's Domino. Auntie Nim's friend Slane is here with the information we wanted.
Dev said,
You go. I'll feed Damien if he's okay with that.
I could feel that Damien wanted to sink his fangs into Nathaniel and me more, but a lot of the heat had dissipated. I was pretty sure it was in St. Louis with Richard, Jean-Claude, and Angel. I was careful not to think too hard about that, just in case it reopened the marks too wide between us. I did not want to suddenly be in their heads in the middle of sex, or worse yet, in the middle of Jean-Claude feeding the Ardeer for both of us.
If you let me capture you with my gaze, it won't hurt. It will just feel good,
Damien said.
I'm all for feeling good, but now that you've come to the dark side, I'm sure you could make it feel even better.
Dev, I said. He grinned at me.
I'll stay and make sure that he behaves, Nikki said. I plan on being the perfect gentleman,
Damien said.
I wasn't talking about you,
Nikki said. Nathaniel and I left them to it and got out of the van into a fresh bout of drizzling rain. Slane had his hat pulled down low against the wet. With the long hair, his puppy dog ears were completely hidden.
My mistress is impressed with the effort that you have put into searching for the missing Rowan and his lady.
I'm glad to hear that, but do you know where they are?
Nay, but if there comes a time when we could lend a hand to you and yours, we will.
I looked at him for a second. That's great, but I'm a little confused. I thought you had information that would help us find the Rowan and his girlfriend.
No. But there is a Rowan who has come forward. He would mate with you.
After what happened to Riley, I'm not sure that's a good idea, I said.
He understands the danger, but he wishes to talk to you and especially the red-haired vampire you have brought back with you.
Why does he want to talk especially to Damien?
He knew the vampire before he left Ireland.
Okay. Where do we meet him and how do we keep him from being disappeared on us like the last Rowan?
We will use our magic to keep it hidden. Young Riley should not have tried to sneak behind his master's back without magic to hide him from her eyes.
I understood that Nim and all of you wouldn't have anything to do with the Rowan because you didn't want to be on the wicked bitch's shit list.
I'm not sure I understand what that means,
Nathaniel said.
Being on someone's shit list means they're mad at you and hold a grudge.
Then yes, we did not want to be on the shite list.
What changed your mind? I asked.
You have shamed us, and not much will do that.
He said with a smile, but his eyes didn't look happy. I wasn't sure if I was supposed to apologize for making them feel bad, or celebrate that they were going to help the Selkies now. We seemed to be ahead, so I just said, When and where is the meeting?
Now, and not far.
How did you know that Damien was awake for the day? Most vampires wouldn't be.
Our magic is fading here in Dublin, but we still have our ways.
Is that a polite way of telling me you won't answer the question? He looked surprised.
I gave you an answer.
I had a moment of wanting Flannery here to do cultural translation, but just let it go. I might ask him later. Right now I'd make sure our vampire had finished his snack, and then we'd go meet the new Rowan. I hoped this one had better luck afterward than Riley had. Chapter 56. The first meeting had seemed pretty secret to me, and yet Riley and his girlfriend were both missing. This time we met in a churchyard at the edge of an ancient-looking cemetery. Compared to last time, it was out in the damn open, and that had gotten two people kidnapped. I didn't understand why we were meeting here until Damien hesitated at the edge of the stone wall. He had the hood on his coat up, his hands plunged into the pockets, sunglasses back in place. Honestly, with the hood up, there was almost none of him in the sunlight.
I can't step on holy ground, Damien said.
I had a duh moment. Crap, of course you can't. Some vampire expert I am. He smiled.
Trust me. I won't forget that stepping on holy ground could make me burst into flames.
Wait, I've had vampires with me in graveyards before and they didn't burst into flame.
This is a graveyard inside a church wall. It's potentially part of the church itself and I can't enter a church.
Nathaniel said, You're not sure if you can step on the grass inside the wall or not, are you?
No, but it's not worth the risk to me.
I hugged him and said, Totally not worth it. You stay here and I'll go find our mystery guest. Slane watched us, waiting on the other side of the little metal gate, and I asked him, Why did you choose this location when you knew we had a vampire with us?
I did not choose it, he said,
which answered and didn't answer the question all at the same time. Nathaniel stayed with Damien along with Donnie and Brennan at Slane's request.
Humans make some of us nervous.
It was interesting that none of the rest of us counted as human. Not bad or good, just interesting. Dev was happy to stay with Nathaniel and Damien. Nikki went where I went, but after that, everyone let Jake be senior guard and send himself and Kazim with me, while everyone else waited outside the wall with our nervous vampire. Slane left us waiting in among the weathered tombstones, while he checked that there was no one inside the church that we'd want to avoid. I was right there waiting on the edge of the graves, and I just couldn't help myself. I lowered my shields just a little, and there was nothing. It was like standing in the middle of a meadow or a garden. There was no sense of the dead under the ground. It was just living ground. Had the bodies been moved, but the grave markers left in place? That happened in the States sometimes. Hell, in St. Louis, if a company had permission to build on an old graveyard, they only had to move a spade full of dirt from each grave and the tombstones, but weren't forced to move the actual bodies. Was that what had happened here? Nikki leaned in and whispered,
What's wrong?
I can't feel the dead. I can't feel anything except the ground, which is fertile and alive. Slane came back out of the church.
Is this the first Irish graveyard you've visited, Miss Blake?
Yes.
Does it feel any different from the ones back in America?
I frowned at him. Is this a trick question?
It's not meant to be.
Have the bodies been moved? He looked out over the graves.
To my knowledge, what was buried here is still here.
If this Rowan wants to meet with a vampire, why meet inside a church? He knows that the vampires can't go in there.
Once he feels reassured, then he will come out to Damien.
What will reassure him? I asked.
Come inside the church and ask him yourself.
I stared back over the graveyard and its strangely alive ground. As a teenager, I'd have given anything to be able to walk through a cemetery and feel nothing. But now, I wasn't afraid of graveyards, but I was a little afraid of this one. Why couldn't I sense anything?
You are unsettled, Miss Blake. I thought it was tradition that necromancy didn't work in daylight.
You can't raise the dead in daylight, but I can sense the dead.
What of ghosts? Do you sense them as well?
I try not to see ghosts.
How can you not see them?
He asked. The same way I don't go around raising the dead willy-nilly, by controlling my natural gifts.
So without control, you can cause the dead to rise spontaneously?
No, not exactly. Let's meet this mystery man, Slane. I have to meet up with the local police later. He led the way into the church without another word. The church smelled old, like mildew and water and weariness. I'd never thought a church could have a feel to it like a person who had seen too much and needed to rest. How did you let a church rest? I genuflected and crossed myself automatically, and then I went up the church aisle. Slane led us to a man sitting in one of the pews. He had long black hair shot through with silver and white, no gray, so that the contrast in colors didn't look so much like age as just the way his hair was colored. I knew plenty of people who would have loved to have the color combo as a dye job, but nothing was going to look quite like the real thing. Slane moved past the man so that I could sit next to him. Nikki sat on the other side of me. Kazim and Jake sat in the pew behind us. The stranger looked at me with huge black eyes, so like Riley's that it startled me for a second, like looking into the eyes of the dead. Was it a premonition? Or just a family likeness? I was told you wanted to meet with me, I said.
And Damien,
the man said, and his voice was a deep bass. You didn't meet many men with voices that low. He can't come inside a church, I said.
I wasn't certain that you would be able to walk inside a church, the man said.
Yeah, yeah, I'm a necromancer, all evil and ungodly. That's me. He blinked those huge, liquid eyes at me. I didn't think he'd gotten the sarcasm. Apparently neither had Nikki, because he added,
Anita's joking. She gets tired of people assuming that she's evil just because she can raise the dead. My apologies then, miss, but I had to be certain you weren't in league with her.
How does the fact that I can enter